Let me move on to Ryan Lance, who is the president for exploration and production for Europe, Asia, Africa, the Middle East for ConocoPhillips. I'm not sure what that leaves out, Ryan. And please have a little bit of sympathy for him. He is just off the plane from Kazakhstan this morning, so if he looks a little droopy, we'll give you a little bit of a break. He began his career with ARCO in 1984 in Alaska, and over the span of his career, returned to Alaska in 94 and 98. And not until 2002 did you finally broaden that portfolio to not only the lower 48, but then on to Asia and into this huge portfolio that you now command. He's also on the board of the American Petroleum Institute and also the Independent Petroleum Association of America, and was schooled in Montana. Ryan.
Thank you, Karen. And thank you, John, for what looks to be another highly successful conference for the council. Hopefully, try to address, you had a number of intriguing questions, Karen, in your opening remarks, and I might try to hit a couple of them with respect to collaboration and a little bit on our views of energy independence versus dependence versus security. I was struck a little bit by a comment that Mr. Bohisian had at lunch today. He quoted a couple of figures that were pretty interesting. One is that we live today in a $60 trillion economy, and that $16 trillion of that comes from direct trade around the world. And I don't know what the figure is or how much oil and gas and petrochemicals contribute to that $16 trillion, but I would imagine that it's a pretty significant amount. So we depend on each other, and we'll all benefit from that shared prosperity. And I'd like to try to apply that lesson a little bit to energy today. So we have the U.S. and Europe and China and Japan and other consuming nations around the world. What do we want? We want energy supply security. And now we have, with demand and prices falling, we have the exporting nations around the world that want energy market security. So we all need each other. There's a recent example here in the U.S. over the last 3 years with the major hurricanes that struck, starting with Rita and Katrina, and this last year with Hurricane Ike. It was the first hurricane that I've lived through, and I don't care to do that ever again. Because of this, we saw a tremendous, we were called back to Katrina and Rita. We had gasoline and diesel prices spike here in the United States pretty tremendously. But it wasn't but about 30 days later that they came back down to pre-hurricane levels. Now, how did that happen? Because we still had over 30 to 40% of our refining capacity in the United States on the Gulf Coast out of commission due to those major, major storms. Well, what happened was the classic interdependence that we live in the world today. So crude started to flow from all around the world, the United States, Canada, Mexico, the Middle East. And it came to the refineries that were still working in the United States. Products, petrochemicals, gasoline, diesel flowed from Europe, flowed from Asia into the United States, such that our prices dropped pretty dramatically. So you can see that interdependence is critical. So because of that, our company, we support open access to markets as well as to opportunities to develop those resources. We believe that producing and consuming nations must and can work together. There's a mutual benefit when national oil companies, or the NOCs, work with publicly traded international companies, or the IOCs. In fact, the industry's long-term ability to deliver adequate, secure, and affordable energy depends on that collaboration. World demand has been strong in recent years, and it's bumped up against global oil production capacity. Although demand has flattened recently, as Karen pointed out, we expect growth to resume after the world financial markets and the economies recover. So the industry must continue finding new resources to replace production and preparing for that future demand. But it's going to be expensive. Today's development projects require longer, more complex facilities, longer supply chains, and the means to deliver to broader markets. It's true that the leading NOCs have their own impressive technical and project management skills and financial capability today. But we face a rapidly changing environment. The tight credit markets could make it more difficult to finance these projects. And we face unrelenting cost and margin pressures during a time of falling commodity prices. And lenders don't like those kinds of risks. The financial and operational capabilities of the IOCs can help reduce that risk and help reassure lenders. Meanwhile, technology is evolving rapidly. New resources are becoming accessible for the first time ever. That is, to those producers with the right skills and the expertise. And for those reasons, we believe that collaboration will become more vital in the future. I'll give you some parameters of potential collaboration. An NOC is driven by motivations that are strategic, they have commercial objectives, they have national priorities and geopolitical goals. Local content and infrastructure are critical. An IOC must be attuned to these needs. A proposed collaboration must recognize the NOC's requirements while enabling each party to contribute the skills and competencies they have. In the case of NOCs, these skills include knowledge of the country, from geology to the local markets. The NOCs have hard-earned experience and finely tuned political and social sensitivities. On the other hand, IOCs provide comprehensive technical solutions from their global experience in many different geologic and operating environments. We have big project expertise and data management skills. These are difficult to replicate and are essential in the mega projects that we face today. The IOCs are highly experienced in producing from mature fields. We're experts in secondary and tertiary recovery, gas lift, and other technologies. We can help maximize the output from conventional oil, heavy oil, and sour gas deposits. And these kinds of expertise are going to be essential as these giant conventional fields decline and the NOCs turn to more challenged resources and unconventional sources. So we're already seeing new model of collaboration emerge, and they're based on five components. First, complementary business and technical strengths, material stakes for both partners, a dedication to maintaining good relations that have to start with the CEOs of the companies, a commitment to contract sanctity, and last, a strong alignment of interests, not only on the project goals, but in each partner's broader strategic long-term aspirations. These new models demand a larger focus and a longer range view than the joint ventures or production sharing agreements of the past. Now, I don't want to get into a commercial for my company, but I think if you, because we all have similar examples of these joint ventures that work, but I think if you go through a little bit of them that were involved, when you get a flavor for the size, the scale, and the scope, and the different things we're having to do as an IOC today to continue to grow and develop our company. My first example actually doesn't even involve an NOC, but it shows the type of close relationships that you have to advocate in today's markets. Our company is an investor in one of Russia's largest companies, Lukoil. We have a strategic alliance, and we own 20% of that company. A joint venture with them is developing a major Arctic oil development in Timișoara. We participated in the financing, and our expertise helped them make possible $500 million of savings through that expertise. And we're now looking with Lukoil to identify other opportunities in other countries. We share employees. They second people into our company. We second people into their company. We also work with Norway's Statoil Hydro and its two predecessor companies for over 40 years. We're co-venturers in Ekofisk, the North Sea's first major oil field. This project extended the frontiers of technology, finance, and people-to-people component of energy partnerships. We developed an enhanced respect for resource sovereignty and stewardship. We gained a deeper understanding of the national social priorities and increased sensitivity to cultural values. In turn, we contributed expertise in technology, financing, project management, training, and development. Next is our relationship with Qatar Petroleum, near to the Middle East area that we're talking about today. It's an exceptionally broad collaboration that is developing our Qatar Gas 3 LNG project. It's even extended to working with another IOC, Royal Dutch Shell, who's a partner in Qatar Gas 4 in a single integrated project. As Ms. Nabila said, we're working with Saudi Aramco. We're engineering a refinery in Yanbu, and ConocoPhillips will be an equity participant in that refinery. And we're calling upon our expertise in our global refining projects around the world to help in that endeavor, all the way from Algeria to Libya, where we work with both national oil companies there, to our recently announced effort in Abu Dhabi, where we'll develop the sour gas field at Shah. And we're also working with people in our hemisphere in Petrobras the memorandum of understanding to collaborate with them. So it's not a sales job, but it's just an effort to try to sync the size, scale, and scope of these collaborations that have to exist today, because as Karen indicated before, 80% of the resource potential for all companies lie in the hands of the NOCs. So we have to figure out collaboration models that work and that are win-wins for both sides. We don't like technical service agreements, and that's some of the flavor that we're seeing out there today, because they don't enable us to fully utilize our technical personnel. We want to invest our discretionary cash flow, and we want to be able to add new production and reserves to grow and develop our company. So in considering these opportunities, we feel that contract sanctity and stability are essential to help control our risk. We need assurances on stable fiscal environment over the long term. And then one final point. As energy producers, we recognize the world will need fossil fuels for a long time to come. But there's a growing worldwide interest in alternative and renewable energy and a concern about global warming. We face serious challenges in the oil industry to continue to provide the energy that powers the world economy in the near term. Over the long term, oil and gas can serve as a bridging fuel to the energy future. But in order to do that, the industry needs access to the lowest cost, most environmentally friendly resources. Most of these resources, as I said, are controlled by the NOCs. We believe the best way to supply the energy that the world needs today and tomorrow is through this collaboration between the IOCs and the NOCs. Thank you.